Today's shir is Masechet Ksubos Daf Samach Vav, and we will begin on Daf Samach Hei Amud Beis at the new perek. The perek begins Metzias Ha'isha. It's interesting to note there's a Machloikus Rishonim. What is the proper order of the prokim in our Masechet? Tosfos, we follow Tosfos' opinion that our perek is Metzias Ha'isha, and the reason this perek, according to Tosfos, follows in the previous perek of Afal Pi is because, as we learned in the last mishnah of the previous perek, that a wife is her earnings go to her husband, but we learned that under certain circumstances her required minimum wage is lowered if she's a nursing woman, as we discussed at the end of the shir yesterday, and therefore this mishnah that we're going to discuss in a moment, the halacha of her earnings, is a good continuation of the previous perek. That's Tosfos' opinion, and that's the opinion that obviously we follow. The Rishonim to disagree and say that really the next perek we're going to learn, perek Hamadir, should actually follow perek Afalpi. And their explanation is because the last mishnah we learned in perek Afalpi discussed a situation where a husband and wife don't live in the same apartment, and the wife is being supported through an administrator. And the perek Hamadir also discusses where a husband made a neder that his wife is not allowed to have benefit from him, and there she's supported through an administrator, so it's really very much the same subject, and therefore they say perek Hamadir should follow perek Afalpi. Again, we're going to be learning Mitzishem perek Metzias Ha'isha. So the first thing of our mission is Metzias Ha'isha. If a wife finds something, the halacha is that it goes to her husband. And we show him explain, why? Mishum Eva. Pashup Shat Eva is resentment. If a husband's going to know that if his wife is able to find something and keep it to herself, that will cause resentment between the husband and wife. And that's why Chazal said that it goes to the husband. Says the Rosh, quotes Maram Rattenberg, just like we learned and will learn, that a wife has the ability to say, Eini nizayna sayna oisa, I don't want your support and I won't turn over my wages. So Ram Rattenberg says the same should be regarding Metziah. If the whole reason Chazal said that the Metziah goes to the husband is because of Eva, in a situation where the wife is not being supported from the husband, there her Metziah should belong to herself. The Rosh disagrees with the Ram Rattenberg, and he gives a number of reasons. One is he says that the word Eva has two definitions. We're used to explaining Eva meaning resentment. If a husband is supporting his wife, and then she keeps her wages, it causes a feeling of resentment between them. But says the Rosh, the word Eva has a different definition too. Eva means it could cause a fight, katata. It could harm the Shalom Bayis. And therefore, says the Rosh, the reason why the wife, if she finds something, has to give it to the husband, is because if she finds something, keeps it herself, it'll cause problems in the marriage. According to that, says the Rosh, even if he's not supporting her, the halacha is he gets the metzias. Another pshat that I saw is that by, as we explained many times in the previous perek, regarding wages and support, they could have a deal 1 year that she keeps her wages and doesn't get supported. The next year they could switch the deal. However, regarding metzias, it wouldn't make sense to keep on going back and forth. And therefore, Chazal established that forever, her metzias go to the husband. Another pshat is a Yerushalmi. Interesting Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says that the reason Chazal said metzias, that something a wife finds, goes to the husband, is this concern, hard Yerushalmi to understand, that the wife may go to her husband's wallet and take out some money. And when the husband asks her, where do you have this money from? She'll say, it was a metzias, I found it. So he could really bring to a situation, a very uncomfortable situation in the marriage. But if the halacha is that even if she found it, she would have to turn it over to the husband, that will avoid any problems like that happening in the marriage. And therefore, according to the Rosh, and that's the halacha, under all circumstances, if a wife finds something, it belongs to the husband. Says the Pnei Yeshua, now we could understand the order of our Mishnah. Because it's somewhat difficult to understand. Our Mishnah begins with Metzias Ha'isha, what a wife finds, and the next halach is Masiyadeh, what she earns. Certainly, Something that is earned is much more frequent than something that is found. So shouldn't the Mishnah mention Masiyah there before Metziah? Says the Pnei Yeshua, according to what we just explained, very geschmack. Metziah, we said, under all circumstances, goes to the husband. Masiyah daim, it already depends. She has the right to say, I'll keep my wages and won't get supported. Therefore, the Mishnah mentions Metziah's issue, which is always the din, versus Masiyah daim, which the woman has the right to waive that right. Masiyah da, what she earns goes labala. Interesting shaila, the Rav Chanan asks, how do we view this halacha, the masiyah dayim, that the wages a woman earns goes to her husband? Is pshat, says Rav Chanan, that she earns the wages and then she has to turn it over to the husband? Or is pshat that Chazal said that the wages go directly to him? So you would think, what's the nafkamina? So I saw a very interesting shaila where this shaila is very much a nafkamina. There's a woman working at a job, and her place of employment is having financial difficulties. So the employees decided that their employer has been nice to them, and they want to help him out. They're going to forego their wages for a month. Help him out. So now the question is, does a wife of a husband have a right to do this? If we say that the wages go to her and then to her husband, so the wages are first by her, and she has a right to forgive her employer. If, on the other hand, the Takanas Chazal is that the wages go directly from the employer to the husband, so it's not hers to forgive, it's not hers, it's going to her husband. Interesting. Shaila la'alocha l'maisa. V'yerushasa. So Rashi says, tu pshatim in the word Yerushasa. One pshat, Rashi says, in Yerushasa, if she gets a Yerusha after they're married, the halacha is who oichel peiros b'chayel, that the peiros of that Yerusha go to the husband and the base remains her. Another pshat in Yerusha, so Rashi says, is a halacha that we learned many times, that if she dies before him, he inherits her. So ask the Ritva, if pshat is like the first pshat of Rashi, that whichever she inherits while they're married, he eats the peiros. So why does the Mishnah have to say it? It's no din than everything else that she owns, all the nechsim malug that we've discussed so many times, he eats the peiros. Answers the Ritva. A woman brings nechsim malug into a marriage, so we know the halach is that the husband eats peiros. That a woman will get a Yerusha while they're married is something that the husband doesn't expect. And therefore, perhaps we should say that he doesn't eat those peiros. Teaches us the Mishnah that no matter what she receives, both if it's something that he expects her to receive or something that he doesn't expect her to receive, the halacha is the peiros go to the husband. We know the halacha is that if one person does damage to another person, there are five things that have to be paid. Nezek tzar, ripui shevus abayshus. Our Mishnah doesn't discuss ripui shevus abayshus. Ripui, the Rishonim say, certainly goes to the husband, because since he's responsible to pay her doctor bills, he has to be reimbursed. Although I did see a machlokes, let's say the medical treatment she deserves is whatever, but she's willing to take a more painful medical treatment, which is cheaper, and take the difference in the cost. So the question is, who will get that differential, the husband or the wife? Sheves means unemployment. That certainly goes to the husband, because, as we just learned, he gets her earnings. Tsar, which means the pain she suffered, certainly goes to her. She's the one that suffered the pain. Yet I saw machlokes achronim, pnei Yeshua and Afla, what will be the halacha on the tsar? The base certainly goes to her. Will the same halacha, that the peiros of the tsar belongs to the husband, or is the tsar completely hers and the peiros of the tsar don't go to her? But there are two other payments. There's boishta, humiliation, or begama. Begama means what we call nezek, her going down in value. So the Tanakhama says, shalom, that belongs to her. Yehuda, b'mesera oimer, b'zman shebeseser, if it's something that's internal, lo shnei chalokim, she gets two-thirds, v'loi echen, he gets one-third. B'zman shebegoli, if it's an external wound, loy shnei chalokim, he gets two-thirds, v'loi echad, and she gets one-third. So here we have a very fundamental machloikis, Rashi and Tosfos, how to understand this machloikis of the Tanakama of the Rabbanan Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. Tosfos says that the machloikis between the Tanakama Rabbi Yehuda and Beseira applies both to Boishta and Boishta and Pegoma. Pegoma means, Tosfos says, like we explained, an internal wound versus an external wound. And Boishta means if she was embarrassed in a private place versus if she was embarrassed publicly. And the machloikis, according to Tosfos, is both by Boishta and Pegam. Rashi disagrees. Rashi says the machloikis of Yehuda ben Beseira and the Tanakama is only regarding Boishta. But regarding Pegoma, everybody will agree it goes to her. Shaloi, whatever portion he's supposed to receive, Yenosin Yemiyat, he gets his share. The Shaloh and her share, Yelakach Ben Karka, like everything else. We buy property, Vuachal Paris, and he eats the Paris. Ask the Gemara, my Kamash Malon, when is our Mishnah teaching us that we haven't already learned on Daf Mem Vavam Abeis? Tanina, we learned over there, Ha'av Zaki Bevita, a father has the right by his daughter, Bekudusha, to marry off, Bekesa Beshtara Bebiya. Zakim Mitziyasa, if a girl finds something, it goes to the father. Masiya Deha, if she earns, the wages go to the father. Ba'farus Nadara, the father has the right to annul Hanadarim. Mekabalus Gita, he gets a get if she gets divorced as an arusa. Then Oichel Peres Bechaya, he doesn't eat the Peres. Nisis, but once the girl enters Nisuin, Yeser Lavabal, the far husband is more, Shoichel Peres Bechaya, that he does get to eat the Peres. So everything we learned in our Mishnah, we already learned in Daf Mem Vav. Why do we need to repeat it? Answers the Gemara, Ba'ishto Begami Itzrichalei. The Chiddush is the case of Ba'ishto Begam, to teach us the Plukta of Yehuda ben Beseira Rabbanan. Says the Gemara, Tani Tana Kamei de Rava. There was a Tana that taught in front of Rava. Metziya Seisha, if a woman finds something, La'atzma, she keeps it. Rekiva Omar Labala. Rekiva says, like our Mishnah, it goes to the husband. Ask the Gemara, Amalei Hashta. Difficult to understand. Omahadofa the Masiya Dei. If she earns extra wages, Rabbi Kiva teaches us, as we already learned, and we're going to repeat it in a moment. Laatzma, she keeps her extra wages. Mitziyasa, which are even less common than extra wages. Loi Koshkein, Rabbi Kiva should certainly hold. She keeps. And doesn't go to the husband. So how could you suggest, ask the Gemara, that according to Rabbi Kiva, those extra wages go to the husband? The Tanan, we learned the Mishnah, if a woman makes a nether, I won't have any benefit from you. You're not allowed to have any benefit from me. Is the Alocha and the Tzarech Lahafer. The Tanakam and the Rabbanon hold, there is no reason to annul that nether. It's a meaningless nether. Everything she earns belongs to her husband. Rabbi Kiva and Miyofa. Rabbi Kiva says, yes, he should be made for it. Why? Shema Tadif Lov Yoisim and Aroyloi. Because she may earn extra wages, which the husband is not entitled to, and therefore the nether, if it's kept, will be valid. So the Rabbi Kiva tells the husband, you better annul it. So we see that according to Rabbi Kiva, the Hadafa belongs to the woman. If the Hadafa belongs to the woman, certainly the Metzias should belong to the woman. El Eipach. So the Gemara says we have to reverse what we said. Metzias ish, according to the Tanakhama, what a woman finds, Labala, just like Hadafa goes Labala, so too does the Metzias ish go Labala. Rabbi Kiva ima La'atzma. Ask the Gemara, just like that. Dafa goes to itself, so does the Metzia. Ask the Gemara, is that correct? The Kiyasa Ravan Am Rabbi Yochanan, Bad Dafa Shloye Deitchak. If a woman earns extra without any great difficulty. And the Rishonim give a number of examples. One example, the example that we've been discussing of what is the basic job of a woman to work with wool. So let's say we give the woman such wonderful, high quality wool that she's able to easily sew more, because it sews for itself. Or let's say she's a cook, and we give her such high quality food that she's able to very easily prepare very good dishes. That, says the Gemara, Kula Amalai Pligi, everybody will agree, the Baal Hava. Ki Pligi, where's the Machloikis of the Rabbanan and Rabbi Kiva? Badofa Shadei Tchak. A woman works overtime. She strains herself. According to the Rabbanan, that still goes to the husband. According to Rabbi Akiva, it goes to herself. So the Rishonim asked the obvious question. If the woman is straining herself to work overtime, she's not supposed to, she's not responsible to, why does the husband get it? So Rishonim say a beautiful pshat, according to the Rabbonim. So Rishonim say a beautiful pshat. Nothing in life doesn't have a repercussion. Therefore, if a woman works, they explain, if a woman works extra hard, she puts in extra hours, we're going to give different examples in a moment, it's going to affect her health. Who's going to have to pay those doctor bills when she's not well? Who's going to have to suffer when she's not well? Her husband. That's why the Rabbanan say, that Adofa, even though it came out of Idei Etchak, goes to the husband. Rabbi Kiva, on the other hand, says that it goes to her. So I sort of mafarsh and take this a step further. Why will Taka be the din? This woman worked extra hard, and it affected her health. And now she has medical costs. According to the Tanakhama, the husband will have to pay those medical costs because he took the benefit of those extra work. According to Bekiva, that she took the benefit of the extra work, so the husband doesn't have to pay those doctor bills, she has to pay those doctor bills. So that's what the Gemara says. Keep pligi, ba'dofa shtei tekhak. Tanakhama sovel abala, Bekiva sovel, it goes la'atzma. Omra papa, says Rapapa, mitziyasa. Now, if she finds something, kadofa asher idei etchaktami. Finding something, and the way Rashi explains the Gemara, you don't just find something. You have to look for it. You have to look hard for it. So that's why Rabbi Kiva says, just like that dofa idei etchak goes to the wife, so does the mitzias. And Rabbanan hold that just like that dofa idei etchak goes to the husband, so does the mitzia. It's the plukta of Rabbi Kiva Rabbanan. By Rapapa, asks Rapapa, and the way most Rishonim explain this question, it's going according to Rekiva. Rekiva just taught us that Adofa Idei Tchak goes to the woman. Ask the Gemara, Oslishtaim Basachas. If a woman does two things at the same time, let's say she babysits and sews at the same time, Mahu, is that considered Adofa Idei Tchak or not? And then Ravina goes a step further. By Ravina, Shloisha Idalar Basachas. She does three or four things simultaneously. Mahu. Is that going to be considered Adofa Idei Tchak or not? And the Gemara says, Teiku. So, as I said, most Rishonim explain that the question the Gemara just asked is going according to Rekiva. Other Rishonim say that the question that the Gemara just asked is even going according to Rabbanan. Even though the Rabbanan hold that Adofa Idei Tchak belongs to the husband, there's a limit to that. A woman taking three or four jobs is so strenuous, it could be that even the Rabbanan will agree, goes to the wife. It's interesting to note, it's a machloikis hapoiskim, what is the halacha? The Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah say hadofa idei tchak goes to the husband. The Bach and other poiskim say that hadofa idei tchak goes to the wife. The Chazon Ish says that we have to follow the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. Others, however, suggest that we don't have to follow the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. We could say that I follow the opinion of Bach. Then there's a very interesting machlokes of contemporary poskim. Most women nowadays don't work with wool. What's going to be the halacha if a woman has a profession? She's a doctor. She's a lawyer. So is that going to be considered hadofa idei tchak? She had to work hard to become a doctor or a lawyer. Or is that her job? Women nowadays do all sorts of profession. So it's interesting, machloikis. Rabbi Yaakov Bloy, in the Pischa Echoshin, says that a woman having a sophisticated position nowadays is not considered Adofa Idei Tchak. Rabbi Yoshev, on the other hand, says that the Mishnah taught us that what is a woman's job? To sew, to knit, babysit. Something more sophisticated, certainly as sophisticated as a doctor or a lawyer, would be considered Adofa Idei Tchak. Continues the Gemara, Baish Tabagama. Our Mishnah taught us a very bechidish. This is the way most Rishonim explain this Gemara. Our Mishnah taught us that if a woman is humiliated, the husband gets part of the payment. Ask the Gemara, Maskula Rabbi Baruch Chanan, Elamata. If we're teaching now a chidish, ask the Gemara, that someone else could be humiliated and I could get the payment, ask the Gemara, if so, Bayish Susa Shel Chaveroi. Let's say somebody embarrassed my horse, so I should get payment. Hachanami the boy Lemitinlei. I should get Bayish. I should get a Bayish payment. Ask the Gemara, v'sus by Abayshasu, can a horse be humiliated? So Tosfos asked the obvious question. What's the Gemara's question? We're comparing a woman, a wife, to a horse? And just like a wife gets humiliation, can get humiliated, my horse can get humiliated? And Tosfos doesn't answer the question. He says, Tema, I don't understand the Gemara. In fact, there's a very interesting shot from the Gra, that the Gra says in answer to Tosfos' question that this man, the Omer, never understood what the question was. It never meant a horse. You can't compare a horse to a wife. What he meant was, as the Gemara will say in a moment, what happens if you embarrass somebody's clothing? That is really more similar to wife, but a horse, the Gemara never intended. He got mixed up with the word susoi and kisusoi. Susoi means a horse, kisusoi means clothing. It's the gross of art. Other Mepharshim say that the Gemara's question meant as follows. How do we view the payment that a husband receives for humiliation? Do we view it that the wife was humiliated? She's the one that gets the payment, not I, the husband, get a share of it. If that's the case, it shouldn't make a difference what got humiliated. Or is pshat that a wife and I, as the Gemara will actually teach us, lemaskana, ishta kagufoi. And that's why when she's humiliated, I'm humiliated, and that's why I get payment. Not, however, something that's not considered me myself. Ask the Gemara, the question to ask is as follows. Rokek v'bigdoi shel chaveroi. If somebody spit at my garment, Hachanami, the Bible Mittenle Boishes, that I should receive Boishes, it's my garment. V'chitema, and if you'll suggest Hachanami, that I am deserving of a Boishes payment, V'tanan, there's a Mishnah Masecht of Abakama, Rokak v'giyah by a roik. If somebody spit at my clothing and it hit, or par roish isha, or somebody takes off the kerchief of a woman, have it to lace men, or somebody rips off somebody else's clothing, Chayiv Litenle Meizuz. We have to pay the person who was the victim a very significant fine for boishes. Vamra papa, loy shana ala boy. If the saliva hit the person himself, avo be big doy pit potter, but if it only hit the clothing he's wearing, that halacha doesn't apply. So we see that big doy is not me, so the same should, why is a wife different? Answers the Gemara, the obvious teretz. Be big doy, lesley zelusoy, if my clothing are embarrassed, it isn't the same as me being embarrassed. However, Ishte Islay Zulusoi. My wife is clothing is not a human being that doesn't have emotions. My wife has feelings. Ask the Gemara. If we're making a difference, something that has feelings versus that doesn't have feelings, Amle Ravina Leravashi, Elamata Biish in Ibn Toivim. Let's say, and this is why Tosfos explains the Gemara. Let's say in our family, there is a poor person that the entire family takes care of him. Like Tosfos explains, a wealthy person is independent. He's self-sufficient. The rest of the family doesn't have to take care of him. But a poor person that relies on the rest of the family, so he's connected to the entire family. This lays loose, and he's a person. And let's say somebody embarrasses him. Since the entire family is connected to this individual, this lays loose, l'kol b'nei mishpacha, so if he's embarrassed, we all feel that embarrassment. Should you suggest, ask the Gemara, Hachinami, the Bayil Mitan Lil Boishas Chamashpacha, that the entire family deserves a Boishas payment, because we're all very connected to this individual. Amalei, says the Gemara, you can't compare the two situations. Hosam Lav Gufayu, a husband and a wife, Ishte Kigufay, and therefore the husband and a wife, if the wife is embarrassed, it's as if the husband was embarrassed. Hacha, Ishte Hacham Lasam La Gufayu. The Ani and me were very connected, but he's not me. Hasam ish the gufa have it, and if my wife is embarrassed, it's as if I am embarrassed, and that's why I deserve a boishes payment. A very interesting vort, the Mepharshim say. Typically, we know there's a rule throughout Shas, that if the Gemara, if we have a machloikus, and then we find that the Gemara debates and tries to understand one of the opinion, that must be that's the opinion of Halacha L'maisa. So here we had a machloikus in the Mishnah, between the Rabban and Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, does the husband get a payment or not? And we just finished learning a piece of Gemara that who gets debating Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira's opinion. So it would seem that the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira. Say to Mepharshim, the when is that rule applicable? That if we find that the Gemara is trying to understand one opinion, that must be the proper opinion, la halacha l'maisa. That's when we have two individual Tanoim arguing. So we don't know who's the halacha like. So we see that the Gemara is focused on one opinion. That must be because that's the opinion la halacha l'maisa. However, in our Mishnah, it's a machlokes between the Rabbanon and Yehuda ben Beseira. So even though the Gemara is analyzing Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira's opinion, that doesn't mean that halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, rather that halacha follows the opinion of the Rabbanon. Says the Mishnah, HaPaisik Maas L'chasnai, as we've been learning so many times, a father-in-law writes a nadin for a son-in-law. And here we have a terrible tragedy. Umeis Chasnai, they had Erisin, and before there was Nesuin, the son-in-law passed away. So since there was Erisin, as we've said so many times, this woman is really an Eishes Ish, and the halach is she forced to Yibam. So now, the father-in-law could say, Amru Chachamim, Yochel Hu Shiyomer, the father-in-law could say, L'chicha HaYisiriya Tzileitem, I was willing to give your brother, the person I chose as a son-in-law, the dowry, L'chayyev Shalitem. So we're trying to make a number of halachic comments. One they say is, it matters the wording of the father-in-law. If when the father-in-law promised the nadin, he didn't promise it to the son-in-law. He said, I'm giving it to my daughter. There makes no difference who the husband is. He's not giving it to the husband, he's giving it to the daughter. And therefore, the father-in-law would have, the father of the girl, the father-in-law would have to give the nadin. But then there are rishonim that suggest that the only time that the father could not have to pay the nadin is when he promised the nadin to the son-in-law, he said, I'm giving it to you, I'm a nasl konsai. He added those three very important words. I'm giving to you on the condition that you do nisun with her. So since he's not the one doing nisun, it's his brother, so he doesn't have to pay the nadin. Other Rishonim disagree, because they say it's self-understood that when a father promises a dowry, it's self-understood that he meant, I'm a nasl konsai, on the condition that he married, that their marriage be consummated with Nisuin, and since that chosin will not actually end up taking the girl, it's not, there is no din of amnas, of he has to pay the dowry. Now teaches us the Mishnah another interesting din. Paskal hachnis la elef dinner, hu paisik kenegdan chamesh esri mona. Let's say the father-in-law promised 1,000 mona as a nadin. Teaches us the Mishnah that when they come to write the ksuba, he has to add a third, and it should be 1,500, a third milbar. Why? So because the father-in-law is giving him money, he's going to be able to take that money and invest it, and make money in the, over the course of the marriage, and therefore he has to write 1,500. Ask the Rishonim and the Achronim, why is there no problem of ribis here? Interest. He's giving me, I'm giving the son-in-law 1,000, and he's going to give me back, he's going to give her back 1,500. So the simple answer is that ribis is only when there's aganater, there's, I'm giving you money with a stipulation that you could hold on to my money. So you're paying for holding on to my money. Here, what happens if they get divorced the next day? He still has to pay the 1,500. So it's not aganater. That's what some Rishonim explain. Others want to explain that it's self-understood that it's not being written in as a ribis payment. It's being written in as a gift from the husband to the wife. And therefore, there's no ribis issue. The flaw says a very interesting teretz, a different teretz. He says, what does interest mean? Interest means there's a lender and a borrower. So the lender lends the money, and if the borrower obligates himself to pay extra, we have a shaila of interest. What is the case in our Mishnah? The case in our Mishnah is, the father is giving the dowry, the son-in-law is writing in the amount to pay, not back to the father-in-law, the amount to pay back to the wife. So it's not from the borrower to the lender, it's from the borrower to a third party. That's not called ribis, and therefore it's permissible. At least midrabbanan, it's not ribis midraisa, for sure. We'll talk hilchos ribis when we learn masechta b'metzia. Now the Mishnah teaches us another halacha. Ukineged hashum hu paisik pachas chamish. Mishnah teaches us the following din. And this is the way Rashi explains the din. The woman brings into the marriage different articles. Those articles, we take off 20%. That means, let's say she brought an article that's worth $125. In the ksuba, we only write $100. Why? So there are two reasons, Rashi says. One reason, Rashi says, is because articles that are brought into the marriage typically depreciate. Wear and tear. So that's why they're undervalued. Another pshat is that it's typical, Rashi says, that because we want to show the chassan how nice his kala is and what wonderful things she's bringing into the marriage, so we inflate the value. And therefore, since we inflate the value, when we write the ksuv, we want to write the true value. There's interesting machlokes, Mashah and the Pnei Yeshua. Under what circumstances do we write in the ksuba this less than the evaluation? The Mashah says only when both conditions are met. It's an article that depreciates, and we have a concern that they were over-evaluated. The Pnei Yeshua says that even if we have just one of those concerns, we already devalue it in the ksuba. Because of this halacha, says, there's a machlokes rishonim. Because of this halacha, a husband should not sell articles that the wife brings into the marriage. Because let's say she brings a refrigerator into the marriage. If he's going to sell it, the mat brought into the ksuba is undervalued. So when he's going to have to replace it, he's going to give the mat written to the ksuba, but that's not the replacement cost. There's a machlokes Rambam and Ritva. So far, if he did sell an item, will the mechira be a valid mechira or not? So therefore, says the Mishnah, ukeneged hashum, articles that were brought into the marriage that were evaluated, hu paisik paichas chamish, we take off a chamish. And therefore, but tells us the Mishnah, and we shum b'mana v'shav b'mana, let's say we know, this is the way most Rishonim explain this line, that the assessment that was written into the ksuba is indeed a true assessment, then the halacha is ein lo mana, then we do write in the real value. The only time we have a concern is that we have a reason that to believe that the value was inflated. And now, as the Gemara will point out, the Mishnah teaches us the same halacha a number of times. Shum b'mana, if let's say it was evaluated at a mana, hu naisin shloish of echet sela for dinner. In the ksuba we write 125. Because she writes, if she brings in something that was evaluated at 100, in the ksuba we consider it 125 and then devalue it to 100. Similarly, uba abameis, if it's really worth 400, in the ksuba we write, hino senes chamesh meis, it's the 20% milbar. Masha chos and paisik, upachas chamesh. Whatever's written to the ksuba, we take off a chamesh. Tan rabban. So the Gemara goes back to analyze the first halacha of the Mishnah. What was the first halakha of the Mishnah? That if the father-in-law promised a dowry to a son-in-law, and then that oris passed away, and now it's the yavam who's actually going to marry the kala, the halakha is that he doesn't have to give the dowry. Says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Ein Tzarech Loimer, goes without saying that if the Rishon is a Talmud Chacham, and the Sheni is an Amoritz, the first son-in-law that he took was a real Talmud Chacham, the yavam is an Amoritz, that the father-in-law would say, I was prepared to give this nadin to a son-in-law who was a Talmud Chacham. I wasn't interested in paying for Yura and Amoritz. But says the Gemara, what will be the halacha? Afilu Rishon Amoritz, v'sheni Talmud Chacham. The first son-in-law is an Amoritz, and still the father was prepared to give a very generous dowry. And now he ends up with a Talmud Chacham. So l'chayra, he should certainly have to pay the nadin. Teaches us the Gemara, Yochalayim, the father could still say, L'chicha ha'yisi roi tzalitain, I was prepared to give to your brother, L'chayyef shalitain, but to you I'm not prepared to give. So the Mefarshim are very troubled. The Mefarshim are very troubled. The Meiri. He says, why is the father exempt from paying? He ended up with a better son-in-law. So if he was willing to give to this guy who's Amoritz, he certainly should be willing to give to this person who's a Talmud Chacham. Says the Meiri, yes, the first son-in-law might have been Amoritz, and the second son-in-law was a Talmud Chacham. But you know, he says, the first Amoritz might have been a bigger Baal Midas. He might have been a better character. And in a marriage, he says, character is more important than Talmud Chacham. And therefore the father could say, you're a bigger Talmud Chacham, but your brother, the Amoritz, was a bigger mensch. And that's why I was prepared to pay for a mensch. You're not necessarily such a mensch. Says the Gemara, Paskal Hachnas La Elif Dinner. So as we pointed out in the Gemara, that if we keep on underestimating the value of the ksuba, ask the Gemara, Hainu Reisha. So why did the Mishnah say the same halacha four times? Answers the Gemara, Tana Shuma Rabba, V'Ktana Shuma Zuta, Tana Shuma Didei, V'Ktana Shuma Didob. This is the way Tosfos explains the Gemara. The Mishnah speaks about four cases, which could be divided into these four cases. Two cases refer to the chassan, that when the chassan's writing the ksuba, and two cases when the kal is writing the ksuba. And then we could further drill it down. Sometimes there was a big, there was a lot of assets brought in, and sometimes there were not such a large amount. And the Gemara is teaching us, it makes no difference if the chassan writes it. Makes no difference if the kala writes it. It makes no difference if it was a lot, where there is a greater concern for inaccurate evaluation, or a small amount where there's less of a concern. Under all circumstances, this halacha of devaluating and taking off a chaimish always applies. Says the Mishnah. Paskal achnas lo ksofim, if she promised to bring into the marriage cash, slaw nasa shisha dinrim. We learned the other day that every seller has in it four dinar. So for every seller that she brings into the marriage, she gets six dinrim, because that was the halacha that we learned in the previous Mishnah, and the Gemara is going to ask the question in a moment, why we repeat the same din, that we always, when she brings cash into the marriage, we override it an extra third. Says the Mishnah further, hachos mekabalov asar dinim lekupa lechamon of a mana. For every mana of value that the chassan brings into the, for every money that the kala brings into the marriage, the chassan is obligated to give 10 dinrim for the kupa, for every 100 dinrim. What that means, the Gemara will describe soon. Shimon Gamliel Omer, hakol k'minhag ha'medina. And there's a number of shilas understanding of Shimon Gamliel. Some Rishonim say Rav Shimon Gamliel is referring to this last din, that the Mishnah teaches us that for every mana she brings in, the chassan writes asar dinrim of kupa. Says Rav Shimon Gamliel, not always is that the din. Sometimes it only depends on the minig. Then there are other Rishonim that say, the Ritva says this, when Shimon Gamliel says Hakol Kaminig Medina, is not only going regarding this last din that we learned, but rather refers to all the dinim that we learned in the last two Mishnayis, that the halacha is that we don't necessarily follow what the Mishnah says, we should follow local custom. Then there's a machlokes Rishonim. Is there even a machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon Gamliel? It could well be that the Tanakhama will agree with Rav Shimon Gamliel that Minig HaMedina always supersedes everything else. And all the Tanakhama is referring to is in a place where we don't know what the Minig HaMedina is. So then we follow the formula of the Mishnah. But certainly the Tanakhama will agree, and this is the way most Mefarshim and Paiskim hold, that Minig HaMedina always supersedes everything else. Up to the point that I saw a tshuva from the Chelkas Yaakov. He says that by right, the firstborn child, especially if it's a boy, the name should be the choice of the father to choose what name he should get. Especially, he explains that it's connected to the bris milah, and since the responsibility to make a bris is the father's, so it's all his right. But he says, since we know that in a lot of communities, the minig is that the name of the first child, we follow what the mother wants, that halacha of hakol k'minig ha'medina supersedes. And she has the, if that's the minig of the family, of the community, we follow the minig. Says the Gemara. Ask the Gemara, as we pointed out, the first halacha that we just learned in our Mishnah is halacha that we learned in the previous Mishnah. Hayinu paisa kenegdem chamisha asamana. We already learned in the previous Mishnah that if she brought in 1,000, he writes in 1,500. Why do we have to repeat it in this Mishnah? Answers the Gemara, tana eskaraba, v'tana eskazuta. The previous Mishnah was when she brought in a huge amount, meyimona. This Mishnah has just brought in a seller, v'tzricha. And we need to teach us the halacha whether she brought in a lot of cash or she brought in not a large amount. Ditana iskarabba, if we only learned the case of the previous Mishnah, where she brought in a very large amount of cash, the nafish rifcha. So it's very likely that he's going to make a very large profit, and she deserves a share. Ava iskazuta, if she brought in a very small amount of money, the Zotar Rufcha, there's not really much of an opportunity to make much profit. Emeloi, maybe she's not going to have the Salocha Tzricha. V'yashminan, and we only had this din that we just learned of Iska Zuta, the Zuta Zuyuna, there's not a lot of responsibility when there's not a lot of money on the table. Avol Iska Rabba, the Nof is Zuyuna, when there's a lot of money, there's also a lot of risk. Emeloi, maybe she isn't entitled to this. That's why Tzricha, the Mishnah, had to say the halacha both when she brought in a lot of money or when she didn't bring in a lot of money. So we learned them. We said we're going to explain it now in the Gemara. Hachos mekabelov asar din al kupa. For every kupa, for every 100, he has to make asar din. My kupa. Ask the Gemara, what does this mean? Amar Rav Ashi, kupa shel besamim. For every mana, every 100 dinrim of money she brings in, he has to give her 10 dinar of besamim. Vamar Vashi, says Rav Ashi, Lenemrat Varm Halalu El Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim, the women were accustomed to have cosmetics, and that's where she has to be given these cosmetics. Ask Tosfos, but we know that in Yerushalayim, they didn't need perfume. The Gemara says, in Masecht Yuma, Shlohoysa Kalat Tzrichlas Basim, B'Bnei Recha K'tayris. The K'tayris was so wonderful that they didn't need perfume. So why is he giving her in Yerushalayim perfume? So Tosfos answers that the perfume, there's two types of perfume. There's perfume to give a nice scent, and there's perfume to help the complexion. We're not talking about perfume for a nice scent. In Yerushalayim, it wasn't necessary. We're talking about the perfume for her skin. That the K'tayris didn't help. Another pshat is that the women in Yerushalayim were so high class that even though the K'tayris gave them a nice scent, it wasn't enough, and they still needed perfume. Another teretz, I saw, is very simple. Yes, while they were in Yerushalayim, they had the K'tayris. But what happens if a woman from Yerushalayim travels out of town, and she's accustomed to this beautiful scent that she doesn't have out of town? That's what her husband has to give her to psalmim. And the last teretz, which is the simplest teretz, is our Gemara is talking about after the Churban, where they didn't have the K'tayris anymore. Bar Rav Ashi. So now Rav Ashi wants to understand this 10 dinrim of psalm that she gets. The manam hanishim or the manam skabel. We just finished saying that the money she brings into the ksuba is overvalued. That for every 1,000, we write in 1,500. So we make this formula. Do we follow what it says in the ksuba, or do we follow what it's really worth? Im tam tzloima, manam skabel. And Rav Tosfos explains, the next series of questions are not really connected to the previous series. Yoyim Rishon or Kol Yoyim V'Yoyim. This that the husband has to give, all of this cosmetics, because of this formula, does he give it to her all that she deserves on the first day of marriage? Im Tem Tzolayim Kol Yoyim V'Yoyim. Or the first day or Kol Yoyim V'Yoyim. It's divided over many days. Im Tem Tzolayim Kol Yoyim V'Yoyim. If we say it's divided over many days, divided over many days, but Shabbos Rishayna, all in the week of the Sheva Brachos, the first week, or Kol Shabbos Rishayna, so it's divided over a number of weeks. Im Tem Tzolaymer, Kol Shabbos Rishayna, how many weeks? Is a Chodesh Rishon, the first month, or Kol Chodesh V'Chodesh, over many months? Im Tem Tzolaymer, Kol Chodesh V'Chodesh, and if we say it's divided over many months, is it Shana Rishayna, or Kol Shana Rishayna, all over the Shana Rishayna, or over many years? Says the Gemara, Teiku, the Gemara doesn't answer the Shaila. Says the Gemara, Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, Ma'is of Abita Shal Nagdim and Ben Gurion. There was a story with the daughter of Nagdim and Ben Gurion. Shepaskul HaChachamim, Abba Me'ez Zehuvim. The Kupa Shal Basam. Just for cosmetics and perfume, they promised her a huge amount, 400 gold pieces, L'boi B'yoyim, for one day. Amar Lehem, Kaf Tifschul B'nei Seichem, your daughter should get this much. V'anachre Amen. So there's a three-way machlokes rishonim how to understand this Gemara. One way, which is perhaps the simplest way, but not the way most rishonim learn, she got a tremendous amount of cosmetics. And she told the people, all of your children should be zoicha, should be have such wonderful presents given to them. But most rishonim explain that she was actually not so happy. And here we have a machlokes, Tosfos and other Rishonim. According to Tosfos, the husband was still alive. But she came to Bezdin to decide how much is she deserving. And Bezdin looked into the case and they gave her this much, which for most people would be a tremendous amount. But she, as we're going to learn tomorrow, came from a very wealthy home and she was upset. So she said, I wish on you. She meant that, forbid, that all your daughters should get that much. She thought that she was giving them a klala, but really the Chacham said, halavai, Halavai, our daughters should get such wonderful amount of psalmim, and they said, amen. But other Rishonim, the Shita, the Ritva, they say that actually her husband had died. And now she was coming to collect from the assignment, from the estate. And the Beis Din decided this much she's deserving. She was unhappy, and they still said, amen. But now we have a question. In the previous year, we had a Gemara with the same woman, was a Shemeres Yavam. And the Chum refused to say amen, because they felt if they're saying amen, they're saying amen that their daughter should be Shemeres Yavam. So why over here are they not concerned about saying amen that their daughters will be Amonis? So the Pnei Yeshua says an unbelievable pshat. He says, being a Shemeres Yavam is very unlikely. So a woman is a Shemeres Yavam, and we say amen to our daughters. It's a terrible thing. Our daughter should have to be Shemeres Yavam. He says, death is inevitable. Death is inevitable. So saying amen, that the husband will die, that's not called a klala, because that's the way the world goes, that people die. And that's why they didn't consider it a klala. That's why the Pesach can say that if a person does something while he's alive to prepare for after death, he buys a place, a burial, he prepares tachrichim, that's not considered that he did something of a bad omen, because dying is considered very natural, that's going to happen, and that's not considered a bad mazel. But certainly, the Eibishter should help, that we shouldn't have these problems, we should all have a Arichas Yom V'Shanim Tovus.